We may be on in 2 weeks, I guess, Mike. We will reiterate this, and that'll be the last chance for you to hear it. If you have any questions, call the station. They might even know about it. Maybe some of them in the station staff is listening now, and we'll be able to refer to anybody to the facts that it's at 620 Church Street at Town Inn, 7 p.m. September 11th.
I doubt it, Bob. People who work at the station don't listen to the show anyways. So.
They don't listen to our show.
No,
because it's too dangerous. They don't want to have any knowledge. They want to deny any knowledge of it in case CRTC people come in on it, right?
And as always, we open up the phone lines after our half-hour segment, so people can call.
To talk to Bob.
12:30.
But we do have a special guest today. As part of the escalation as we go into the end of 88, the fall cultural season, it's important that I offer more direct experience and perceptual evidence of my activities in the past, the present, and the future. I am going to offer on the line tonight, we're going to have a dialogue. This person, due to his position as an aide to me, Bob Dobbs, on the Secret Council 10, obviously cannot appear too visible in public, so we will be talking to him via Central Council of 10 headquarters. He has, if you recognize the name, this guest, his name is Tom Rich. Proof that he's my aide and that there is conceptual and perceptual continuity happening in my career on CKLN because he worked with Bob Marshall. He was known as a participant on International Connection. His name was Tom Rich then. It still is. And Tom Rich is here tonight via electric simultaneity, telephone hookup, and radio broadcasting. Tom and I are going to give a sample of the kind of elite dialogue that goes on in the Secret Council of 10 in those meetings over the past 10 years. With Tom being an aide of mine, he is able to talk about some of the things that the other members of the Council of 10 didn't know about, which allowed my victory, the special knowledge from bottom-up analysis via, well, we won't say what it is, but you, if you heard my show, know the extra Finnegan's Wake reference point that I use to bypass all opposition. So I guess without further ado, let us try to bring Tom in from Central Headquarters, one of my chief aides over the past decades. And Tom is going to offer us some samples of questions and dialogue that we have used in the Secret Council negotiation and meetings. And we're going to talk about events today to show you how the Secret Council of 10 operates directly with the events of, what is this, August 20th to 17th, all right? So the events of August 17th will be dealt with. Tom, are you there?
Greetings, Bob. How are you tonight?
I'm okay, Tom. I'm always feeling good when subgenii are near me and operating under electric conditions with me, like Mike, who is rapidly evolving into a subgenii. You yourself have been one for a long time and have worked and have seen the battles that we've engaged in and have been very good at security measures and backup in dialogue maneuvers. Tom, take it away. What is a sample question on your mind that probably would have been discussed in the Council 10 before we took over and was just a matter of pastime for us now?
Well, Bob, I'd say that genius plot is a tremendous rhetorical tool for probing and opening up comprehensive awareness. I'd say today what would be of interest would you'd have to write at the top of the priority list for the Zia assassination and the way it's been recorded in the news and trying to see behind and read between the lines and see behind the news. It's quite early. But certainly there's some tremendous connections between what's going on in Afghanistan and the assassination of Zia, as well as what's happening around the Rockefeller-Rothschild axis.
Yes. Now, do you want to make a statement about this first or ask a question? How do you want to approach this dialogue?
I wouldn't hesitate to ask you, who do you think was behind the assassination? I think that to most people seems rather obvious, but it is interesting that the battle is heating up as we get closer to the time of the election.
Why would you think that an election is important?
Well, obviously, even to those who don't recognize that the political instrument can be disguised as an entertainment agency, And this disguise is a monkey suit called for by current pressures. Anybody who's aware of these things knows that an election is a major point of awareness and brings attention of the masses to the television screens more than any shift of any power, if that is what's going to happen at all.
Right, and by masses we would include everybody, even these elites manipulating
the global theater. I think the key today for people who are interested in honing their perceptual apparatus is to recognize that there's a global theater in which they are participants in a theater, not recognizing that they're in a theater. And that the important thing is to try and find the backstage door in order to get behind the stage and examine what tools the experts use in order to wake up and create this tremendous show.
And one of the tools they use is keeping it secret that they are in the position of the masses. They are merged into a discarnate nobody position, everybody into nobody, and are as much participants and not consumers of the power game as they present themselves to be.
Yeah, well, the emperor is invisible, and he's in the audience.
That's right. Now, the emperor is probably the only member of the audience because everybody else is an actor under global theater absurd electric conditions.
But something that's interesting is the emperor, prior to electricity, did require a clown in order to keep in touch with what was going on. However, under electric conditions, the clown's role becomes obsolete.
Or merges with the emperor. How about the...
I don't know. I tend to, right off the bat, just think that perhaps the clown just becomes obsolete. Obsolete meaning if it works, it's obsolete.
All right, so it works.
We're all clowns.
All right, so the emperor comes...
No, we're all clowns, and the emperor's in the audience.
And the feature of the clown's condition is alienation. He has a grievance. And everybody has a grievance when they've been transported into the discarnate state. And so even the emperor is a clown. So the emperor come clown, the first magical express of that was Pierre Trudeau. But I think Ronald Reagan represents the emperor come clown to extreme point where it's probably flipped till we will accept a dull clown now. That is the search for the new image in the American election, for a dull clown, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say that. And I would parenthetically add to our remarks this evening that quite often in discussing the effects of the technologies on mankind, both individually and collectively, there is created the audience senses the fact that perhaps there's some great consciousness about the people who behind the scenes appear to control. Now, I would add that perhaps that is not necessarily, even though they gain that impression, that is not necessarily the case. It isn't necessarily, certainly, there are some times when there are conspiracies and consciously moves in particular directions along existing lines of force. However, as I mentioned, with regard to a political instrument can be disguised as an entertainment agency, i.e. why the CBC must be dull.
Yes.
I think that because dullness is the only means of control of a centrally owned medium of expression. But remember, nor does this doctrine have to be enunciated or proclaimed to a government agency. It's an instinctively understood law of operation, and just as it is that way, I think the same goes for the pattern of events that we're describing. Don't necessarily assume that what we're saying is some great master brain of people in control of everything. They're in control of certain aspects of things, but once they put things into effect, they necessarily aren't quite sure of how it will turn out themselves. If they were, we wouldn't have to worry about disguising it.
Right. So I would say that on Spaceship Earth, there are no passengers, only crew. Therefore, everybody is reduced to the position of studying the effects of what they're creating daily.
Well, that's right. And the left hemisphere, literate minded person who has been taught to pigeonhole, to classify, which is a mental process which comes about as a result of the phonetic alphabet, speeded up with the printing press, etc. I think that the person who data classifies at is when they run into the electric age of information overload, they're still trying to data classify. In which case, what they're doing is basically they're tantamount trying to use a stationary point to hit a moving target, which is ludicrous.
Yes, it's a forlorn response.
Exactly.
Now, the shifting to...
I just wanted to point out a pattern that seems rather obvious to me and I think is one that people ought to consider, and that is you wanted to, what we would discuss together in dialogue is the fact that, I mean, the Americans have recently made it known that they have so-called made a mistake in shooting down an Iranian airliner.
Speaking of targets,
a moving target, which they claimed, according to the very high technology, was at a certain point in time descending a threat. And yet the international unbiased information that we get from the International Civil Aviation Authority, backed up by other agencies, the Italian military, etc., says that this plane was right where it was supposed to be in a commercial lane and hardly was a threat. It shot down. It's obvious to anybody who puts two and two together and maintains a common sense.
And arrives at 23.
A rational sense, that this was a premeditated act. But what's interesting is that, and I fault our news agencies for not pointing out the pattern that within a few moments, within a few days, not by accident,
Hammer's company.
First Occidental oil platform in the North Sea is blown up, and we're told it's a spark. You know, but it's comedic, the excuses used in order to hide the retaliations in this battle that are going on.
But that's because there are no crew, there's no passengers, only crew, so nobody's listening, so they can put out ridiculous content like that on the news because they know nobody can afford to pay attention and adopt a response on that one particular issue.
Well, now, this is the important thing you've brought up, and I think that needs elaboration for the listener.
All right, well, how about this pattern?
Why is it so difficult for people to pick up the pattern that's so obvious?
Because it's a threat to their identity, which is located in their old physical body, in all its characteristics and parts. To be discarnate is the responsibility that we have to deal with that. To be discarnate, what is the appropriate response to that discarnate state when we have no guidelines? But aside from that, what about this pattern? You have that Iranian airline Airbus shot down. A few days later, as you mentioned, Arm & Hammer's Occidental.
Yeah, not by accident.
Yeah, not by accident, but Mr. Occident's platform gets blown up. Around the same time, you have Margaret Thatcher screaming in our parliament, right? Pro-free trade. And then you have Bush's ratings going down to allow Dukakis to be president for a few weeks. Then you have Bush's ratings come back up. So the Federal Reserve ups the interest rate, so that causes panic for some faction against Bush, right? Because as Bush creeps up, they say, okay, let's have a little economic panic and let's have a little crash. So the stock market drops 70 points.
So it begs the question, when you use interest rates as warfare, is this not an example of the effect of the atomic bomb, turning everything into software? Is that correct?
Right. And then on top of that, the parallel is that this free trade action has a major military operation happen when Gretzky moves to Los Angeles.
Oh, that's right. And I think that there's no doubt that the Gretzky thing was a major military operation designed as a paradigm shift aimed at the Canadian identity, isn't it?
Yes, this is the identity and also what Canadians think.
Does it move the individual closer to the collective?
Yes, he is Canada, like Anne Murray was in the 70s. It's interesting, under the right hemisphere values of the 70s, we had a woman as a Canadian identity figure. in the left hemisphere, retrieval of visual values in the 80s, you have a man as the Canadian figure. He has moved Canada to Los Angeles.
All right, well, now let me ask you this. Are you saying that people who are tribally opposed to being tribal are going to be under greater stress in these periods?
Oh, yes. Obviously the newspaper, the agency of tribally being opposed to tribal, like visual medium, the newspaper made a big deal out of this with their screaming headlines.
So there's an example of why newspapers across the country have adopted an anti-free trade stance.
From the very media bias they have in the technology they use of paper, which extends the eye.
The medium is the message.
Right. Now, the next part of the pattern is Zia goes down the day after Dan Quayle is picked by George Bush, right? Now, Quayle is a Rockefeller man, which is working with the Christian faction in Russia. Part of the deal for Quayle to help Bush push it over the top and become president, for a few months anyways, after November, is that they have to move that Pentagon Bolshevik-controlled area out of Pakistan and lay the pressure off of the Russians who are moving out of Afghanistan. So they had to sacrifice Zia as part of the deal with the Russians made in May at the Reagan-Gorbachev summit meeting. They had to qualify that decision, that agreement, that commitment by offing Zia, weakening the Pentagon, and allowing the Rockefellers to control the election at this point.
Yeah, I think that your perceptions put to the test. Definitely, you can bounce a ball off it, and other people would be aware of that. I think that as a footnote to what you're saying, I'd say that it's interesting to note that Quayle comes from his fortune, his wealth comes from the newspaper printing business.
And the Rockefellers are forced to be visually biased because the Pentagon hijacked the solar government. But Gorbachev coming back is an appropriate tribally for being tribal innately, but putting on for the Russian identity tribally against being tribal would naturally align with the Russians, right? I mean, with the Rockefellers, a visually biased group, the First World group.
Yeah, okay, right? That's right. And basically for our audience, we're witnessing worldwide the battle between all these worlds, the First, the Second, the Third, and the Fourth World, battling for the monopoly of the market. They're battling for a monopoly. Each wants the monopoly. It's like musical chairs, where the guy who's left out without a seat is eaten by the other remaining people sitting down.
And the conundrum and paradox there is that that person who loses his chair is forced into the non-market economy, the electric situation, which is a situation, an economy, the non-market economy versus the
drugs.
Yes, versus the normal market, the hardware market. So the software market, the non-economy market versus the hardware economy market. At this point, we're going to take a break. Tom, we'll be back in 5 minutes. We've got to have an interval from Ivan Stang in Dallas. All right?
Bob is a ballpoint pen. Bob is a rooster. And Bob is a hen. Bob is a hen. That's Bob. We want Bob. Where's Bob? We want Bob. Right now. We want Bob.
Okay. Bob's probably not going to be here in physical manifestation.
Where is Bob? He's everywhere. Check yourself and feel of your Bob gland and make sure it's overactive like it's supposed to be.
This is the headquarters for the Church of the Subgenius.
No, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. I love that area. And
I represent a group of scientists who work with but one purpose, to put an end to war. Naturally, such a goal can't be attained with experts. Men of vision, men such as you, Doctor, gathered here, exchanging information daily, putting aside all thoughts of personal success. We hope to achieve exciting new techniques, leap years ahead of the others. I don't think I need tell you how effective our voices will be when the world learns of our achievements. Well, there you have it. Nothing new, perhaps, but then, what is? However, let me assure you, Doctor, that we are dedicated men and women. And as such, we can accomplish wonders.
Back any other church! Back any other church! Divine! Divine rule! Divine rule!
Divine order!
Divine order!
First rule of the subgenius!
First rule of the subgenius!
Too much!
It's always better than not enough!
Always better than not enough!
Can I get it too much? Can I get it too much?
Is it always better than
it?
In today's 10th End Time essay, we will be covering the difference between us and the program and the bloody head marks of society itself. As seen here in our first slide, the bloody head marks of society goes on forever. There is no end, and there's no use resisting.
Heads fall in slow motion.
Just beautiful. Bouncing down the celestial stairs.
Yes, dear friend, those are the things I want to tell you about today. The bare minute things, the things that Bob knows, the things that you know, and when you know, that you know it, because everybody does have that gland, that mystical Bob gland in their feet. That one that tells them what to do if they don't even think with it. But somewhere along in the past, man got confused and decided to start thinking with his brain. And when that happened, oh, dear friends, that was a very sad time in the history of man. Because when man stands on his brain and thinks with his feet, then he'll know exactly which way to go and how to find Bob. You got to massage that foot gland. And the only way to massage it is to walk on it. Yes, sir. Dear friends, you got to walk on the foot gland for Bob. Because when you're walking, and Bob's talking, then you'll know all you need to know about what to do after the Holocaust. After the aliens come and take us and give us all them giant pills and all them fantastic machines that's supposed to run our lives in that big white stone that everybody's going to know personally in their very own home. Ah, yes, dear friends, that stone, that's the stone. That's the stone that you think you might know and you think might help you. But by God, dear friends, that's the stone that's going to ruin your very life. That's the stone that's going to make you think the nigger is on your side this time. Because that stone is going to rule all things. You think you know who Big Brother is? Dear friends, I want to tell you tonight, you don't know. You don't know nothing.
Oh,
shit.
Oh, shit.
So they can keep awake and be under your bed and it's inside the water and shooting the waves and rays up at you all the time.
That's right.
But they're those UFOs. They're flying all over your house. That's right. And they know about bomb. And they're going to be dropping them.
How well do you play your game? How well could you play? Chances are you'll never know unless you're fitted with the proper equipment.
I know, and among other things, Bob, I'm doing pretty well with those pills you sent. Pretty well, but I can always use more, and it's because of Ohio and red trucks, and they're all gone, Bob. But that's okay.
No one's very sure what radiation or chemicals would do to a Xerox machine. No one's very sure what...
Statement 1 is the Dallas Police radio tape, exactly as recorded, November 22, 1963. The assassination occurred at 17 seconds past 12:30 p.m. The first shot was fired 3 seconds after an officer says, "All right, Jackson."
Refused to do anything to stop it.
Excellent work, Mike. Excellent. Beautiful fade outs. Mike's a pro. He gets well paid. Tom, you there?
I'm here.
Come on in with a new angle.
A new angle.
Slang.
And well, you asked me what I thought of that, and I said that under CRTC rule regulations, I can't use slang on the air, which is unfortunate because slang, as we know, intensifies the new and it obsolesces the old and can be used as a probe.
and an index to perceptual unrepeatable experience.
That's right. That's right.
Maybe that's what they mean when don't repeat that when you swear at somebody.
Okay.
That's an intuitive feeling. It's a percept, which can't be repeatable. So not conceptualize it.
Well, to bring in a new angle, I'd pick up with what you were saying earlier, and that is when we put our central nervous system outside and we go inside into the subconscious. We live today consciously within the subconscious. Proof of that is advertising is the only way to reach the subconscious, where we live consciously.
Unconsciously aware of the fact that we are living unconsciously.
Over $22 billion a year spent on advertising by our society in order to reach us where we live in the subconscious. Because, as I said, when we put our central nervous system outside, we go inside, and therefore we return to the primal nomadic state of the Paleolithic hunter, man, the information hunter, the global wanderers, looking for patterns.
Merged into the tribal unconscious. Now, what's the point to make here is, or the pattern, is that the unconscious is norm today.
That's right. And the reason why people may say, well, how did we get in there without realizing it? I'd say, remember Bertrand Russell said that if the bathwater only got half a degree warmer every hour, we would never scream. We're in it. We move very, very gently into it, but now we are in it. And it's a very, very, very bad situation to be in. Basically, what's happened is society has been coaxed into sitting in the electric chair.
Yes. Now, what
I think Eagleton is being retrieved today. Mr. Eagleton, who went under shock therapy, is an image that's being retrieved today, especially in light of Mr. Dukakis's record, as an image of what society themselves as a whole we are in, that we're all coaxed, have been coaxed to sit in the electric chair, not realizing that it is so.
Then would this mean a retrieval?
Under great shock therapy.
Yeah, but would this mean a retrieval of the events of 72 when Eagleton was forced to go under?
Well, no, I don't necessarily think that, because as you know, the ground may be different even though the figures resemble each other.
Right, so that means the... I think we have a reverse here. Watergate came after Eagleton.
Yeah,
now, this situation, we have Watergate via Arangate came before Eagleton Dukakis.
Well,
so we played it backwards.
Yeah, Iran Gate is Watergate played backwards, imploding. It's Watergate in implosion.
And it also flipped with the new audience under 1980s conditions, where the emperor is clown, in the sense that people celebrated the victims of Watergate. They did not impeach them.
Well, the thing that I've been looking for, and it shows you that you can't predict what's going to be the next change in the ground easily. Once the ground shifts, you can pretty accurately forecast what will be retrieved. But under the Constitution of the United States, nothing would have prevented Mr. Bush from choosing Ronald Reagan as the vice presidential candidate, which is very interesting, because I don't think there's many people in the Republican Party who would be against it. It depends on how liberal the conservative Republicans wanted to become.
Good point. Good pattern there. Geez, you blipped me out. I was going to say something.
I blipped out Bob Marshall, didn't I?
Yes, never could blip out Bob Dubs.
No, I couldn't blip out Bob Dubs.
Yeah, that was just a clever way of me to hear you say my old name, because you used to work with him. I have remembered what I wanted to say is that...
Well, Automation Bob, as we know, dispenses with personnel. And right across the board, you wanted me to discuss on this show what has been going on in the economic world today, with the creation of diseases in order to offer the cure. But automation, as we know, dispenses with personnel, and we see this right across the board, where the yuppies are merely a stage in between phasing out the bureaucrat, the man in the crowd, in our regular jobs. I mean, everybody knows that even though the Americans have created new and more jobs, they're jobs that are merely punched. They're just sitting in front of a computer, these people. They're not creative jobs. They're not wealth creation jobs. They're just merely It's like you were a blacksmith, now you become a mechanic.
Well, you mean not a hardware wealth. They create software wealth, which feeds on itself. So there's no momentum, no forward movement in this kind of software wealth creation. It's just moving of information and data.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Information and data. Service industry. The service industries, most people in the United States are in the service industry. Service industries serving others don't create wealth, aren't wealth creation.
So as we do more and more with less and less, pretty soon we will all be passive recipients of the wealth created by one person.
That's right. Take today the executive as a drop-out.
Right. Now the battle is which institution will hog that electric chair position, which I claim I am that person, Bob Dobbs. But which institution will hog the final position, which will create the wealth for all other obsolete institutions?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say that question is one that I couldn't necessarily grab a hold of on in a short period of time and start it. The answers to that are understandable, available and understandable, but it would take volumes to elucidate.
You know,
I'd say there's a lot of paradoxes there that prevent understanding easily, and we better, it's an area that you'd want to stay out of. It's like an elephant trap right now. But I did want to get back to your point about, I like this idea, this metaphor of, under electric conditions, we have put our central nervous system outside ourselves. I think that one of the problems with dialogue, one of the difficulties is that you've got to be careful because it's better to understand a little than to misunderstand a lot. And,
yes, because we're doing more with less. So if you misunderstand the little that is acting, that is the progenitor of the situation, and you're lost in the figures, which are the lot.
I think the important thing today, where people have to start, is to recognize that individually we can analyze our society collectively as by example of the individual, and that don't you agree? That if you can influence what a person sees and hears and feels, then you can affect the way in which they decipher and make reality. Likewise.
But would you want to, since any effect is relevant? So you really have incredible slack now. You can interact with people any way you want, and it'll be appropriate.
Yeah,
because every move is our next move.
Well, that's right. That's absolutely right. But remember that individually, is the same as the collective. When we've put our nerves outside ourselves, collectively as a body, what we see, hear, and feel are all been sold to private operators, manipulators, who don't give a hoot about us and whether or not we're really in touch with what's going on. And, you know, give me a pool, it's like Aristotle, give me a poem long enough and a place to stand, I'll move the world. Today,
yeah,
he'd say, I'll stand on your eyes, your ears, and your nerves, and make the world turn in whatever tempo I choose, collectively as a body politic or as a social body. What we see, feel, and hear is all controlled by private operators, manipulators, who don't care whether we really find out what's really going on. As a matter of fact, the system is set up in which they make more money if they keep us out of it in the dark.
Right, now we've come full circle on our discussion.
That has to be changed. People have to start to come out of their world and understand the grammars and effects of the media around them.
Are you adopting a point of view here then? You found a goal that you would advocate for people?
I'm adopting a point of view.
Can I interject here?
There's an interjection, Tom.
I don't have a point of view.
No, I can just say the CRTC doesn't.
Hold it, Tom. Just a minute.
It depends upon fixing.
That's right, Tom.
Tom, the CRTC doesn't allow points of view on the radio. I'm sorry. I can't allow that.
We have to cancel that last statement, Tom.
I just said it wasn't a point of view.
Okay, let's clarify that.
Oh, okay, yeah. As long as you say it isn't a point of view.
The moving point of view.
You better check our book.
No. Just say you're moving. Keep moving.
Your moving point of view. It's not a point of view. I don't have points of view. And I don't promote anything or support anything. I merely am pointing out what my perceptions are and saying there is a there's a perception, you can prove it. I want you to go out and not take what I'm saying for granted, but go out and see if you can prove it yourself.
Now, Tom, that's what everybody's doing, right? You're expressing the masked man syndrome. Everybody would agree that they are doing what you just said.
I don't think they're doing it consciously, though. I think it's...
Right. Now, how do we make ourselves conscious?
Well, I thought that's what your expertise was, not mine.
Yes, but you've been an aide around me for years. Could you have picked up a way of replaying my strategy through your words?
Well, retracing the process of cognition is like Herculean task, cleaning out the Aegean stables, but once.
That's right, Tom. You know the dogma. That's excellent replay of what I've said many times on the air.
And
you've
done a good job at it, but it certainly is not a task that is accomplished overnight, and it's one that has serious ups and downs, and one which takes tremendous patience, because you're going against a captor who the captives have fallen in love with.
Right, and to come full circle, though, the joke on the captors is that they are involved in the effects too. And that's why a man like Zia gets blown up when he probably was going to a great party and he didn't expect it.
Oh, I'm sure.
That was unforeseen by him.
Unforeseen. I may add that since I do want to return to this pattern, and I don't want to let this moment go by without mentioning to people that I want them to think about the meaning of the fact that Baby Doc fled his presidential palace overnight. 3 days, Bob, after the space shuttle was blown up.
Yes, that's
and
right.
I want people to recognize that connection, because it is, for all those Sherlock Holmes detectives out there who are interested.
Paleolithic information hunters.
Very important. For all those Sherlock Holmes detectives out there who are interested in really what's going on around them, and can get by the comedy of excuses, it's important to there's a starting point as to why Baby Doc flees the presidential palace 3 days after the space shuttle shot down. Why? Now, there's a topic which we can discuss at another time, but I think it's worthwhile that people think about that.
And Okino came in a few days after.
That's right.
Yeah, so many movements. And so, Tom, I think we have to tune out.
Yeah.
So I thank you for your understanding of our work. You express it well tonight. And again, thank you, and good luck, Tom.
Well, thank you, Bob, again, for this opportunity. Keep dialoguing and keep doing what you do best, which is honing your fireproof perceptual apparatus. Good night, Bob.
Good night, Tom.
Night, Tom. Okay, well, you are listening to CKLN. Thanks a lot, Bob, for that very, very unique report.
Yeah,
Castle Headquarters.
Don't you think that's an interesting use of jargon that you've heard on the radio? I think this person, my aide, can use the jargon in a creative way,
mm-hmm.
and offer probes and perception.
It's quite possible. We lost some listeners there. May have confused some listeners. Not everyone is into the lingo. And so I think perhaps if people would like to call, can they call and ask for a brief synopsis?
Oh, yes, yes. I'm always available.
Okay. Well, my name is Mike Dyer. You are?
Bob Dobbs. And Church of the Subgenius.
A regular installment every other week. We'll be back in 2 weeks, Bob.
Yes, and you'll be back, too.
I hope so. Barring an overthrow, of course.
Maybe I'll be on next week when you're not here.
We'll talk about that later.
Yes, 595-1655.
Okay. Who shot the Pope?
Elements of our military, the ours meaning America's military and intelligence services, put together initially and ostensibly for the purpose of defending America from foreign invasion or any kind of hostile threat from abroad, have in fact arrogated to themselves the total power of this society. They decided that they knew better than the democratic authorities in this country what was going on, and that they would eliminate anyone who got in their way. Some of the people who have gotten in their way were John and Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and at this point, several thousand other people of less fame than those others.
Because something is happening, and you don't know what it is.
Shot the Pope with Dave Emery and Nip Tuck every second Sunday morning at 10 on 88.1 CKLN.
Wait a minute.